y'all. It's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails! The long, lazy days of summer have arrived, and with them, the opportunity to travel and see new places.
Maybe you're headed abroad to Paris, the City of Lights, and home of the 2024 Olympics. Or perhaps your journeys are taking you south of the equator to Peru for an epic hike to Machu Picchu, or to Bolivia to see the salt flats of Uyuni.
Or maybe like us, you're finding your travels are closer to home on the trails of a national park, like Mount Rainier, Shenandoah, or Yosemite.
From hikes to hotels to the best spots to eat, Moon Travel has you covered.
From excellent first-hand experience from authors who are local to the areas they are writing about, to wonderful maps and great recommendations, Moon Travel Guides give the reader so much more than other travel guides on the market.
That's right, and we are so excited that this year we are again partnering with Moon Travel.
Through this partnership, through the end of 2024, our listeners can get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when they use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's code GAZE24, GAZE24, for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library, and you actually will not find this deal anywhere else, everybody. Head to our show notes to check it out and see Moon's entire collection of guidebooks.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips, but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings may take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel Guides have you covered.
Head to moon.com and use code GAZE24 at checkout to open up the world of possibilities for your next trip.
Moon Travel. Let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide.
Hello and welcome to Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Mike. And welcome to our Season 6 Summit.
If you are new to the podcast, our Summit episodes are how we wrap up our seasons here at Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. It's our way of looking at each of the parks from that season through four different lenses.
Well, in each of our main stage episodes, we get a chance to talk about hikes in a national park. We don't often get to encompass a larger view of the park space itself. Our summit episodes allow us to look at the parks from the season by examining the visitor experience, the history, the environment and wildlife, and on a much grander scale, the hiking and experiences within the parks.
The first of our four summits is on visitorship. When thinking about visitorship and a visitor experience in a park, we tend to think about visitor information, signage, visitor centers, crowds, accessibility, and the areas that surround the park that might add to the experience overall. Trip planning and creating an itinerary for a national park, especially in regards to what we want our personal visitor experience to be like, is almost like a puzzle for us, as we are usually trying to figure out what we can fit in and how we might be able to do the most with the time we have. It's kind of like that game, Perfection.
Yeah, that game, which gave a generation anxiety. I feel like that is what that game was designed to do. It was
defining. Yeah, that's the game for those of us who need a visual. That's the one where it's all the shapes, right?
And they're like yellow pegged shapes.
And it's like a blue board, and you got to get all the shapes on to the right spot within a time limit, right?
Right, and then the timer goes off and the board shakes everything
and
out
everything
place.
Erupts.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I mean,
but does
perfection.
Does it not do that if you get all of them on, though?
No, I think it still does, but like the accomplishment of getting them all in is just satisfaction enough. You still fail.
But there's still an eruption.
There is no
There's
perfection.
The volcanic eruption no matter what.
There's no perfection, indeed.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How is this like planning our park trips?
Well, I feel like there's always how do we get everything to work in the way that we want it to? Is it possible to get it in time? And if not, the Yellowstone caldera erupts and we all die.
Yeah, or the Hawaii volcanoes.
Exactly.
Volcano erupts.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. ta-da, there you go.
Uh-huh. Mauna Loa.
Yeah.
So to begin with, it's worth mentioning that there have been 5 sites added to the National Park Service since our summit episode on visitorship last year. Those sites include the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley National Monument in Illinois and Mississippi, the North Country National Scenic Trail, which is from Vermont to North Dakota, the New England National Scenic Trail from Massachusetts to Connecticut, the Ice Age National Scenic Trail in Wisconsin, and the Amache National Historic Site in Colorado. The 3 trails on the list were redesignated as a national park site in 2023.
Now, let's look at the numbers as a whole regarding visitorship. During 2023, the National Park Service had over 325.5 million visitors to the 429 units of the National Park Service. Yowza. Well, that seems like an incredible amount of visitors. It is worth noting that in 2019, there were 327 million visitors to the national parks. And in 2016 and 2017, 330 million, 2016 having a slight edge on 2017. Depending on the park and the time of year that you are visiting, you might absolutely feel the crush of visitorship at one of the big 63 national parks or any of the other units in the Park Service. These numbers and the volume of visitors, mainly during the summer months, have led to more and more national parks adding reservation systems to the parks. This could be anything from a parking permit at certain sites within the park to a timed entry window for the park or a certain parts of the park.
Now, as these rules are not hard and fast and are often changing from year to year, it is worth it while planning a trip to a national park space to plan ahead, sometimes way ahead, to understand what you need to know as far as entry goes. Some of the smaller, less visited parks in the Park Service don't necessarily need to plan for a large volume, so it's unlikely that you would need a reservation, but it never hurts to check out the park website first.
As of summer 2024, the following national parks will require some reservation or ticket to enter the park or parts of the park. They include Acadia, Arches, Glacier, Great Smoky Mountains, Haleakala, Mount Rainier, Rocky Mountain, Shenandoah, Yosemite, and Zion. Remember that these are some of the most popular parks within the national park system. While some of these parks, like Arches, Yosemite, and Glacier, will have broader entrance restrictions when it comes to accessing the park through timed entry, parks like Zion, Shenandoah, and Acadia are ticketing for parking and issuing permits for specific hikes.
As always, with any park, do your homework before you go. Some reservations need to be made months out from your visit, and some of the reservations will have a reserve of day of tickets available. However, that being said, it is worth doing your homework and the work ahead of time if you can. So, let's get down to brass tacks and chat about the visitor experience in each of the parks from this season. While we typically go in order of parks we talked about this season, I think the 6 parks of season 6 do nicely as pairs. From 2 cave parks, which we will start with, Mammoth Cave National Park and Wind Cave National Park, to 2 of the smallest national parks, Hot Springs National Park and Gateway Arch National Park, to 2 very large parks, Big Bend National Park and Shenandoah. Everyone has a date this year.
We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land also known as Mammoth Cave National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Cherokee, Shawnee, and Yuchi people.
Mammoth Cave is a park with an impressive resume. Established as a national park in 1941 after being authorized by Congress in 1926, the park is also distinguished in several other ways, including being discovered as the world's largest cave system in 1972, being designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1981, a UNESCO International Biosphere Reserve in 1990, and an International Dark Sky Park in 2021.
The cave, to date, has a length of 426 miles. Let that sink in, because that is some incredible information. Hence the name, Mammoth Cave. When visiting Mammoth Cave, most people will assume that the name itself comes from the gigantic cathedral arched chambers of the initial cave past the natural entrance, but it is the length of the cave which is truly mammoth.
The park, which is regarded for its underground features, does have over 80 miles of above-ground trail and access to the Green and Nolan Rivers. Along with exploring the cave system through a series of ranger-led tours, visitors are just as likely to take a hike, kayak, or canoe on the river, bike, horseback ride, fish, or stargaze.
In 2023, the park saw 654,450 visitors. That seems like a lot, but it doesn't even come close to the volume of visitors in 1993, which was 2.3 million visitors. In fact, from 1996 through 2005, the numbers of visitors of the park per year were regularly in the millions.
And even though the park hasn't cleared the million visitor mark in almost two decades, the park is still incredibly well attended, especially when it comes to cave tours. This is something you will want to make sure you're able to book ahead of time. Mammoth Cave, like some other sites within the NPS, Wind Cave, Carlsbad Cavern, and Mesa Verde, to name a few, are parks that have long had tickets to specific sites or specific tours due to the volume of people passing through fragile environments.
You can hear all about the tour we took in Mammoth Cave National Park in episode 103 from this season, titled The River Styx Tour. This was such an incredible tour to be on and so worth it. Some of the other tours that run in Mammoth Cave include the Historic Tour, the Grand Avenue Tour, the Frozen Niagara Tour, the Wild Cave Tour, the Violet City Lantern Tour, among others.
It is always wise to check ahead to see what tours may specifically run during your visit to Mammoth Cave, and it's always recommended to try to book your tours ahead of time. While there may be tickets day of, if your window to visit Mammoth Cave is small, you may not want to risk it.
Let's talk a little bit about the visitor center experience. Now, when we were visiting, it was the summer of 2021, and we were still running under many COVID travel protocols, which meant masking in most places. But this is a very big visitor center with a main kiosk area that is focused on ticketing and being able to talk to rangers.
It definitely has a newer visitor center with a really great exhibit space on caves and caving, which we had a lot of time to explore. A definite recommendation. This is the only visitor center within the park, and it is a great hub to jump off from to get information before going into the caves on a tour. It's also a quick walk to the natural entrance from here.
One of the things we unfortunately didn't have time for because of the issues with the ferry and a very out-of-the-way circumnavigation of the park was hiking within the park. The park is essentially bisected by the Green River, with much of the caving experience south of the river and most, if not all, of the hiking experience north of the river. That being said, much of the grandeur within the park is found exploring the caves.
Like many parks, accessible experiences exist within the parks for individuals with mobility issues, as there is an accessibility tour for the cave that accommodates visitors with wheelchairs and walkers, and the Frozen Niagara Tour is also recommended for those visitors who may have difficulty walking long distances, as it is a much shorter tour.
All in all, the park is one of the most visitor-friendly parks we have seen. The park really seems to have visitorship under control since so much of the experience is grounded in accessing the cave. It is definitely a park that knows what it's doing. Our next park is Wind Cave National Park. We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land also known as Wind Cave National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Oglala Lakota, Cheyenne, Osheti Shekoan, and many Koju people, as well as many other indigenous people.
So of the cave systems that we've seen, and at this point we've seen all three of the large cave systems of the National Park System, Wind Cave was definitely unique as far as the size of the cave and the formations go. Before we get too deep into discussion, let's pull up the resume of Wind Cave National Park.
Established as a park in 1903 by Theodore Roosevelt, Wind Cave is one of the oldest national parks in the National Park Service. The park received 592,459 visitors in 2023, its most visited year being 1968 with 962,200 visitors. While there are 30 miles of prairie hiking above ground, the park, just like Mammoth Cave, is most famous for its cave system, the sixth longest in the world. Another thing that sets Wind Cave National Park apart from other caves is the high concentration of boxwork, as Wind Cave is touted as having more boxwork than any other cave system. Boxwork are thin blades of calcite that protrude from the cave ceilings and walls, creating a distinctive honeycomb pattern. You can hear more about boxwork and other cave formations from our Trail Mix episode this season titled Cave Formations.
When it comes to Wind Cave, like Mammoth Cave, you'll need tickets to enter the cave. When we were at Wind Cave, the only way to get tickets at the time was to go to the visitor center and wait in line before the cave opened to get tickets. Now, about half of the tickets for the cave tours are available online through recreation.gov, while the other half are held on reserve for day of purchase.
It would have definitely been disappointing to go all that way and not be able to do a tour.
Yes. This was like a absolutely get up early, get up often situation and get there because it would have stunk. And we did wait on a considerable line, so I'm glad that we were able to get through.
At the time, we were only allowed to buy tickets for one tour, and the rangers also let us know that because of the area of the cave that is toured, a lot of the tours overlap routes, and that not going on a second tour would not spoil our experience within the cave. Some tours available include the Garden of Eden, Natural Entrance, Fairground, Candlelight, and Accessibility Tours. There are a lot less tourists here than at Mammoth Cave.
The park itself is relatively small and is situated right below Custer State Park and is also near Mount Rushmore. Both of these things are a draw for folks while visiting Wind Cave National Park. If you find yourself in the Black Hills region, you might also spend some time in Badlands National Park, or maybe even visit Jewel Cave National Monument. There is absolutely plenty to do in this corner of the world.
While we did get on a hiking trail or two within the park, it is worth noting, especially when we were there in the dead of summer, that the trails are very exposed with little to no shade at all. The views from the trails into the landscape of the Black Hills are pretty marvelous, though. In fact, driving through Wind Cave and Custer State Park, we do recommend taking the scenic route, which is 16A. It is not only a great drive, but it gives some incredible views of the surrounding region as you continue to climb in elevation.
When it comes to park signage and trail markers, we found the trails to be easy to find and follow. While there weren't blazes on the Rankin Ridge or Prairie Vista Trail, two of the easier trails that we hiked within the park, these trails were well-maintained and easy to follow.
The cave itself was a tighter fit than we experienced in Mammoth Cave and Carlsbad Cavern, that's soon to come, but it was, for the most part, well-paved and well-lit. There was a decent amount of elevation to gain and lose, either through sloped walkways or stairs. So it may not be that some of the longer cave tours are accessible or even appropriate for everyone. The park does have accessible tours for those individuals who may have mobility issues, and these can be booked by calling ahead of time. As far as trails to hike, those with mobility issues or who may need a stroller or wheelchair would find the easiest trail to experience the Natural Entrance Trail, which is a paved area behind the visitor center.
While the park itself was bustling, much of the crowd centered around the visitor center and the rush to get tickets. The tours will most likely be full depending on the time of year you're visiting, but as we took to the prairie trails within the park, we really didn't see many people at all.
This was a very fun day in Wind Cave National Park. I had a great time.
Yeah, it was really great.
Now that we have done our spelunking for the season, it is time to turn our attention to the two smallest national parks in the national park system. Our next park is Hot Springs National Park, and we would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land also known as Hot Springs National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Osage, Quapaw, and Caddo people.
Hot Springs National Park is the second smallest national park. Located about an hour from Little Rock, Arkansas, Hot Springs National Park has been a national park since it was established in 1921. Prior to this date, the park was a major center of healing through the natural springs within the region, and people would flock to Hot Springs for remedies for all sorts of ailments. In 2023, the park received 2.5 million visitors, bested only by 2022 with 2.6 million.
This is one of the more unique parks within the Park Service, as a lot of this park is based on experience. While you can hike 26 miles of trails, including the longest trail in the park, the Sunset Trail, which encircles the city of Hot Springs and can last anywhere from 13 to 17 miles, depending on your route, the experience of Hot Springs is really all about the preservation of the site due to its geothermal features, the springs themselves.
Well, there are plenty of spots about town where you can actually fill containers of Hot Springs water for free. Another great way to experience the Hot Springs is by strolling Bathhouse Row and ducking into each of the bathhouses bathhouses that you're able to. While you may be able to buy something in a shop in the front end of one of the bathhouses or have a brew at another, shout out to Superior Brewing, you can also tour and see a well-preserved bathhouse in the Fordyce Baths, which is also the park's visitor center.
This is a great experience as it allows you to see what experiences in these bathhouses would have been like in the early 1900s. But if you would like a full bathhouse experience in the remaining active bathhouse on Bathhouse Row, you will need to stop at the Buckstaff.
Visitors to the Buckstaff can pay for a traditional spa package, which will employ the same spa treatments in the historic men's and women's spas of the bathhouse. This is a first-come, first-serve experience that you can only book directly at the Buckstaff, so this means getting in line early. You can hear more about our visit to the Buckstaff in episode 116, Buckstaff Bathhouse.
Because the park itself is centered around the main street called Central Avenue and Bathhouse Row, there is a lot of room for people to explore. Along with the national park sites in Hot Springs, there are many businesses, coffee shops, shops to explore. Any of the smaller trails within the park are located to the east or west of Central Avenue and are incredibly well marked with blazes as well and mapped signboards at central locations. The park is relatively easy to get around, and there are some small accessible trails as well as access to Fordyce Baths for those individuals who may have mobility issues.
From our second smallest park, we move to our smallest, Gateway Arch National Park in St. Louis, Missouri. We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land also known as Gateway Arch National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Kickapoo, Kaskaskia, Osage, Miamia, Ogapa, and Ocheti Shikoan.
Okay, so there are a lot of feelings about Gateway Arch National Park being a national park. Mike, what did you find in your research?
Well, this was, I can't even remember the site, but this was five facts about the site, though, on some site that I was doing a little bit of research on. And the quote is thus: the Gateway Arch and the area around it was initially designated as a national memorial on December 21st, 1935. Here's the real kicker. It was made a national park for reasons no one can explain on February 22nd, 2018. So, yeah, that person obviously had a lot of feelings, which I don't necessarily disagree with.
Read the rest of it. The rest of it is great.
Gateway Arch resembles in no way a site that is worthy of national park status. A national memorial is exactly what it is and should have remained.
Yeah. So, yes, some of these feelings are absolutely understood. The park, which is 91 acres, is indeed the smallest national park, established as the Jefferson National Expansion Memorial in 1935. It was upgraded to a national park in 2018. The arch itself, which is as tall as it is wide, is the tallest human-made monument in the United States. The park includes the old courthouse where the Dred Scott case was heard, to the steps east of the monument which overlook the Mississippi River. In 2023, the arch saw 2.4 million visitors, by no means its most visited year. That was 1996 with 3.6 million visitors. What was going on in 1996? Because people were visiting some parks.
I guess so.
Seriously, 1996 has been mentioned multiple times here.
It has.
As like a really high year for
visitorship.
Maybe
because of the Atlanta Olympics.
That's it. People saw Carrie Strug land that and then went,
but I'm curious if there were a lot of foreign visitors to the country that were like,
true.
I'm going to the Olympics, but I'm also going to do all this other stuff while I'm here. That would be my guess as the bump in visitorship there. So
that is true.
Costing shy of just $15 million, the arch was completed in 1965, nearly after 2 years of construction. The arch's foundations are sunk 60 feet into the ground, and it was built to withstand earthquakes and high winds. The arch itself is as wide as it is tall, 630 feet.
For those who visit, Gateway Arch is truly about the experience of the museum and taking the time to write up the arch. The museum is one of the best curated experiences that we have seen and gives great context for the city of St. Louis, the Louisiana Purchase, and the reasoning behind the arch. It is absolutely worth your time to explore the museum to its fullest extent.
While there is also a film available to watch, the experience of riding the tram to the top of the arch is something out of a 1960s space age film. Not for the claustrophobic or agoraphobic, riding to the top of the arch is like riding the love child of a roller coaster, Ferris wheel, and elevator.
While the museum and grounds of the arch are, for the most part, very accessible, it would be difficult, if not impossible, for those with mobility issues to get to the top of the arch, as the stairs that need to be accessed both at the bottom of the leg and the top of the arch provide no ramp alternative. The pods themselves, designed for six, which is there, they say that it's designed for six, are cramped and would make loading and unloading very difficult. They do say it's designed for six, mm-hmm. but you and I were
tall people
that in there
could barely fit.
And it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Located on the edge of St. Louis, there is plenty to explore outside of Gateway Arch. If you're making the trip, we definitely recommend getting tickets ahead of time, especially in the busier summer season.
Turning away from the caves and smaller parks of the season, we are turning our attention to our hiking-heavy parks. First up, Big Bend National Park. We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land also known as Big Bend National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Humanos, Cahuacatan, Mescalero, Apache, and Chisos people.
Located along 118 miles of the Rio Grande, Big Bend National Park is the only national park with a border crossing located within it. While Glacier National Park comes close, the border crossing is just to the west of the park into Canada.
Originally entirely a state park, Big Bend became a national park in 1944 and was recognized as an international biosphere reserve in 1976. The park is also part of the nearly 9 million acres of land that make up the Greater Big Bend International Dark Sky Preserve, which was designated in 2022. It is the largest dark sky viewing area in the world.
About 4.5 hours from El Paso and 3 hours from Midland, Texas, for as incredible as this park is, its remoteness makes it one of the least visited parks in the National Park Service. In 2023, 509,219 visitors made the visit to Big Bend. Bested by the 2 years prior to 2023 for visitorship, the most visited year for the park was in 2021 with 581,220 visitors.
The park is an incredibly important biosphere for plants and animals, but specifically birds. If you are a birder, this is a park for you, as over 450 avian species either live or migrate through Big Bend. It is quite literally a birder's delight. To hear more about birding in Big Bend, be sure to check out our trail mix from this season titled Birding in Big Bend.
The park, with its lower attendance numbers, makes navigating, hiking, and exploring relatively easy. While you can stay at the lodge, which is located near the Chisos Basin Visitor Center, though this option will become limited through 2025 as the lodge is slated to be demolished and rebuilt, there are several campsites within the park. If you don't plan to stay within the park, you may be looking to lodge in some of the communities that border the park, like Tierlingua. If you drive further out, you might spend your time in Marfa and make your way to the park from this very hip desert community daily. Just know that it's about a 1.5 hour trip one way.
Once you get in the park, be prepared to drive, as the park is the 15th largest in the national park system. While there are a large majority of hikes that leave from or near to the Chisos Basin Visitor Center, there are plenty of other areas in the park to explore. If you aren't hiking through the park, driving along the park roads, including the Ross Maxwell Scenic Drive, which will take you to the Santa Elena Canyon, is a wonderful way to get the experience of this desert landscape.
While the park is rugged, there are some accessible opportunities and trails within the park. All four visitor centers within the park, along with the Fossil Discovery Exhibit, have accessibility and some small trails, including the Panther Trail, the Window Viewing Trail, and the Rio Grande Village Nature Trail, provide more accessible experiences.
While the park is not ticketed and has lower attendance than some other parks, it is worth noting that holiday weekends often see an influx of visitors to the park, and some trails and experiences have limited parking at the trailheads. So, as we always say, hike early and hike often. And also, we are not kidding about the limited parking at some of those trailheads.
Yeah.
Like, girl, that was some limited parking.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes 10 parking spots.
Yeah.
There's a lot of parking at the Chisos Basin Visitor Center, but there's right, also...
But if the lodge is being under construction.
Right.
There's a campsite that's
But also,
lower.
There's like a lot of things happening there.
Yeah,
you got
a lot
visitor
of trail,
center,
yeah.
You got a store, you got the lodge.
Yeah.
trailheads. There's a lot happening there.
Yeah.
So it is a bigger parking lot, but it will still fill up.
Yes. And last but certainly not least, Shenandoah National Park is the park that we have now visited the most, with 4 visits under our belt. And while we have basically seen the park in all seasons, our 2 trips in the spring had a much more wintry feel to them. We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land, also known as Shenandoah National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Manahoac people.
As we have visited Shenandoah previously, we could point a lot of information back to our season 2 summits for Shenandoah, but rather than shirk our responsibility here, we offer some context and most likely an update of where we were in season 2. The park was first established in 1935 and later dedicated as a national park in 1936.
The park has over 236 miles of roads, 105 of those miles being Skyline Drive, which runs the spine of the park. Shenandoah has 516 miles of hiking trails, including 200 miles of designated horse trails and 101 miles of the Appalachian Trail. It includes 4 entrance stations, of which we have gone through the Front Royal and Thornton Gap entrance. There are 2 visitor centers, Dickey Ridge and Bird, both of which we have been to as well. These visitor centers are closest to the 2 northernmost entrance stations.
There is an incredible variety of things to do within Shenandoah National Park, but most people come to hike within the park or to drive Skyline Drive. One of the most popular hikes within the park, Old Rag, is now operating under a reservation system as the sheer volume of hikers have overwhelmed the surrounding communities and roadways.
The park has so many gateway communities, is close to both the University of Virginia and James Madison University, and not that far from Washington, D.C. It is a park that is both incredibly popular and accessible by local communities. In 2023, it had over 1.5 million visitors, nowhere near its most visited year of 1977, when more than 2.7 million visitors descended on the park.
The trails within the park are well-marked and accessible with blazes, as well as the park's signature obelisks, which have trail information embossed in metal, which wrap around the top of the column. While the park is dog-friendly, specific hikes do have restrictions. As always, be sure to check before you head out.
Phew, that was a lot. So, as we do with our summits, let's end this episode with a queen and a game.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Anna Mary Way.
Mm-hmm. Anna Mary Way.
Anna Mary Way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
She's got a Heidi
Who
vibe to me.
Who is Anna Mary?
She has like a Heidi, like...
In the hills.
And the hills are alive.
With the braids.
With the braids of music.
With the braids of music. I do
she
like
has,
that.
She also has a Julie Andrews and Sound of Music vibe. Absolutely. Maria.
Mm-hmm.
She is... Like, it is that feel. Like, I have confidence in sunshine. Like,
got it.
It's that.
I do.
With
I
her
do.
Guitar. And then she takes it out and sings some Joni Mitchell.
I see. Okay, great.
The big man won't give peace a chance. The cobblestones.
I feel like she needs like a bit to undercut all of this. I feel like there needs to be like another side to her or something like that. Anna Mary Way.
Mm.
I feel like she, I don't know, maybe her story is that she begins like she's like Heidi in the hills. And then
So there's narrative here.
Yeah, there's narrative. Yeah. And then maybe by the end of the number, she's like transformed into something else.
I don't know
what she's transformed into, though.
Yeah.
What would be the opposite of Heidi in the hills?
I feel like it would be Elvira.
Okay, great.
Queen of the Night.
Great.
Right.
I like that.
Something I feel like
dark.
It would be like Joan Jett. Like it would go from like really light and like flower childy to like a hard rocker.
Oh,
Joan
I
Jett,
see.
You know,
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And I feel like she always starts the same, but where she goes is different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because she's on her merry way.
She is on her merry way.
Yeah. I feel like her merch would change depending on what she becomes.
Yeah. So, or where she's going next.
Or where she's going.
Like,
it's true.
She might be like, catch me in the Twin Cities. And then I don't know what you'd give.
I'm really, really going for it here. But like, what if like she always started the same way, but she's going somewhere like Transylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore like her look turns, she transforms
Darks.
Into a vampire.
Oh, okay.
So she becomes a person
a
of the place
of the night.
She's going.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
I
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. She's a transformative queen.
That's
like it.
Right.
Great. What is she sing? I guess she's going to sing Confidence.
Sure. Yeah. But it's going to change into whatever she's, mm-hmm. you know,
I love rock and roll.
Yeah. That's it.
There we go. Great. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Anna Merriway.
All right. Let's end this summit on visitorship with a game.
Great. So since I started to talk about doing some research ahead of time when it comes to planning your visit, we're going to play a little game to help kind of like wrap up our episode on visitorship. And it's called Park Connection. I'm going to feed you a list of four things that relate to each of the six national parks from this season: Mammoth Cave, Big Bend, Wind Cave, Gateway Arch, Shenandoah, and Hot Spring. And you'll have to associate the park. So it's just like Connections that both play
on the New York Times app.
Rather than matching the four things, you have to tell me how they connect.
Okay, I got it.
Which is sometimes the most aggravating part of that game.
Ain't it though?
So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, for 100, Scott, Lewis, Livingston, Jefferson.
So, all of these are names of planets, except the fourth letter has changed.
Yeah, that's it.
That's how connections New York Times works.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is Gateway Arch National Park because of the Dred Scott case.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis, Missouri. Mm,
not the way I was spelling Lewis. Can you give me another Lewis that might be associated with Gateway Arch?
Lewis Pasteur.
No.
I'm going to go to the other ones. Livingston is... Mr. Livingston, I presume.
Robert Livingston.
Yeah.
Who was the French foreign minister for the U.S.
Correct.
At the time of the Louisiana Purchase.
Uh-huh. They bought that area of land from him, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then, what was the fourth one?
Jefferson.
Jefferson. Well, Jefferson's the one that did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Meriwether Lewis.
No, Meriwether Lewis of Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Great. For 200, Grand, Wild, Niagara, and Styx.
Okay, so these are all words inside of titles or names of tours that one could find inside of Mammoth Cave National Park.
That's absolutely correct. Look at you go.
Grand Great. Avenue, Niagara.
Frozen Niagara.
Frozen Niagara, the River Styx, and what was the other one?
Wild.
Wild, the Wild Cave tour or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Great. For 300, White Oak, Rose, Cedar, Hollow.
Okay, so this is Shenandoah National Park, but this is because they're all names of trails we've done.
Some of them are trails, but specific features one might see or specifically go to see on a trail.
Like a waterfall?
There we go.
There it is. So Dark Hollow Falls, White Oak.
Rose River Falls, Cedar Run Falls, and Dark Hollow Falls.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, for 400... Dog, mule, burro, chihuahua.
Okay. Dog, mule, burro, chihuahua.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Big Bend National Park.
That's correct.
What I do know is that chihuahua is the name of the desert.
That's right. Chihuahuan.
Chihuahuan desert. Yeah. You said dog and mule.
And burro.
And burro.
They're all trails with animal names associated with them.
Oh, I see. Great. That are in Big Bend.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
Great. Okay. For 500, Eden, Natural, Candle, and Fair.
This is Wind Cave National Park because these are all areas in Wind Cave or names of tours?
Tours.
Words from names of tours.
Garden of Eden, Garden Natural of Eden. Entrance, Candlelight Tour, and Fairground.
Great.
Which we did.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, Quapaw, Fordyce, Ozark, and Lamar. We know the park.
Which is Hot Springs.
Can you give me why they are connected?
Are these all names of bathhouses on
Bathhouse
Row?
That is absolutely correct. Look at you go.
Look at that. That was a great game.
Thanks.
The This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. And that's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariello Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.